Prices shift, petrol jumps, shares fall. A company cuts jobs, and suddenly the business story is everyone's story.
I'm Alan Kohler.
And I'm Carrington Clark. From Monday to Thursday on ABC Business Daily, we break down the biggest stories in business, finance, and the economy, and why they matter.
Then on Fridays, I'll go deeper on That's Business, the people making decisions, taking risks, and shaping where the economy goes next.
Find it all in the ABC Business Daily feed on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Brooke Young, and today on this special edition of The Breakfast Wrap, as the team goes live from Darug Country in Penrith in Western Sydney, the renewed debate over multiculturalism, sparked by One Nation leader Pauline Hanson, continues.
There's just so much hyperbole from Senator Hanson. I saw her on radio the other day saying, we don't want Sharia law, we don't want multiple marriages, as if you support multiculturalism, you must be for Sharia law. Well, that's just complete garbage.
New South Wales Premier Chris Minns fronts the program. And with Western Sydney firmly in One Nation's sights at the state election, the team asks the people of Penrith what they think.
It's a change that Australia definitely needs.
Pauline Hanson has a lot to say, but doesn't have much to back it up.
We've got to stop immigration, there's enough now.
So what's the economic argument for migration in Australia? You'll hear from two expert economists.
Housing is increasing at the same rate as the population is increasing.
It is complete rubbish. We've got nearly 300,000 more migrants in the country than we would have had the pre-pandemic trend continued.
From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. For the last week, the Radio National Breakfast team has been out in Western Sydney, hearing from locals about the issues that matter most to them. From housing affordability to the growing debate over migration and social cohesion. So with this morning's broadcast live out of Penrith, a very multicultural region of Sydney, New South Wales Premier Chris Minns joined the program. And Sally began by asking him if he thought that One Nation's argument against multiculturalism was gaining any traction.
I mean, it's hard for me to speak for everybody, and they certainly are rising in the polls, but I'm a product of Sydney. I've grown up in multicultural Sydney. I'm raising my family in Sydney, and it's the best country and the best city in the world. So, I mean, I think if you've travelled around the world and you've seen what every other country and state and territory and city has to offer, nothing beats Sydney. Part and parcel of its characteristics is that people come from all around the world, different religions, different races, and yet we don't just tolerate one another. We often celebrate it, and we live side by side. So I think that there's just so much hyperbole from Senator Hanson. I saw her on radio the other day saying, we don't want Sharia law, we don't want multiple marriages, we don't want gangs with machetes, as if you support multiculturalism, you must be for Sharia law. Well, that's just complete garbage. It's a sort of bullshit that she's been peddling for a long time, and it's just not true.
Do you think that is sticking at all with some voters?
Oh, maybe, but I mean, that's the arm wrestle of politics. We've got to, you know, you've got to explain your vision or your plan or your idea of what Sydney should be, and people are entitled to challenge it, but we've got to get in the ring and explain or fight for what's great about our city.
We're broadcasting from Penrith today, which has a very diverse community. One Nation has openly said it wants to try to win votes in these seats at the next election. Let's have a quick listen to what some of the locals have been saying to Radio National Breakfast.
We've got to stop immigration. There's enough now.
I mean, I've seen so many people that can't even speak English, but they're driving around with a $40,000 to $50,000 car. Like, you know, and Pauline Hanson wants to stop that, you know, which I'm not against.
She kind of really wants to bring back a true blue Aussie.
Pauline Hanson has a lot to say, but doesn't have much to back it up.
People are very unhappy, so they just kind of get like a little bit of revenge, I think it is.
That's some of the voices from the streets of Penrith this week. What do you make of some of those sentiments, Premier?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of those sentiments in suburbs and towns right across New South Wales. They wouldn't be exclusive to Penrith, if I'm going to be honest about it. Mm. I mean, I think that there's probably a mix of views. There'd be some who have a view that they've got a legitimate perspective on immigration They want to make sure that governments are scrutinising it, that are looking at the rate. They've got concerns about the number of people that came in, literally just the quantum, the number of people that came in the immediate aftermath of COVID. I think we were hitting 500,000 during those years. And it was very difficult for services and infrastructure and housing to keep up with that rate and that pace. I think my sense is that some people have a view about the rate of immigration, for Pauline Hanson to jump over that and say it's a question of an Australian monoculture where we hive off other aspects of the characteristics of Australia is a step too far for a lot of people, even a lot of people that were considering voting for One Nation. And I can understand legitimate concerns around the immigration rate, but to throw out some of the successful characteristics of modern Australia, and in particular Sydney, I think it'd be a huge mistake for our city and our state.
Parts of Western Sydney are being asked to absorb a big share of Sydney's housing growth, but some residents in these growth corridors say that roads and public transport and other services haven't caught up. Why should communities accept more density when they feel the infrastructure promised years ago still hasn't been finished for them?
Well, look, I think there's a few things that we're doing to remediate that. It's very difficult to do, and in some cases it hasn't been fast enough, but we've made, we think, major strides. Firstly, trying to rebalance where density goes. I mean, the arguments for the West communities in Western Sydney are absolutely bang on. You can't have a situation where 80% of Sydney's new housing growth goes on the western fringe of Sydney, whilst the rest of Sydney, certainly those that have got access to public transport and fixed existing infrastructure, miss out. So we've tried to rebalance where Sydney grows by going up closer to the city, where there's public transport links, where there's existing infrastructure, and taking a lot of pressure off Western Sydney by saying, you're not going to take all the housing growth. Secondly, we're plunging billions and billions of dollars into new hospitals and new public schools for Western Sydney, both of which both those areas of spending were not attended to by the previous government in Western Sydney for a 10-year period, and we've turned that around. This latest budget has seen unprecedented record amounts spent on Rouse Hill Hospital, Mount Druitt Hospital, Blacktown Hospital, a new Westmead Children's Hospital. It's exactly where we should be spending the money, but it's long overdue.
That's New South Wales Premier Chris Minns. Well, as you were hearing at the beginning of that interview, people in Western Sydney are tuning into the decisions being made in Canberra. And our very own Luke Sydenham-Dundon has been out in Penrith asking locals what they make of One Nation's policies compared to those of the major parties.
But we've spoken to people all up and down the high street, you know, all walks of life, students, full-time workers, professionals, families, older people as well living in Penrith, people that have been here for decades and some that have only moved to the area in the last few months. The options that they're hearing, not just from the major parties, they're not the only ones suggesting, you know, how to fix problems like the cost of living here. We know that One Nation is targeting areas like this. One Nation convert Barnaby Joyce repeatedly said Western Sydney is in the party's sights. And after their success in Farrer, he actually was on Radio National Breakfast talking about Western Sydney.
Talking to people last night in the western suburbs of Sydney, they're quite at home with the idea of One Nation being a dominant force in Western Sydney.
So tomorrow, One Nation is actually relaunching in the Chifley branch. That is in Ed Husic's seat. It is the next electorate over. One Nation got 6% in their primary vote in the last election there. They are hoping for a much higher result next time. So with that in mind, here is what we've been hearing about the party this week on the streets of Penrith. What do you think about One Nation?
Yes, I'm all for her.
Not a fan.
I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
What do you think about One Nation?
As in the music man?
The political party led by Pauline Hanson.
Oh, sorry, I don't know anything about politics.
We've got to stop immigration. There's enough now. We have to look after our own people.
It seems like she's trying to bring Australia back to the way it was, and that's the way I want to live in Australia. Because it's something everyone's talking about. Like, there's a lot of One Nation and a lot of political views going about just in general in Western Sydney at the moment.
I am Lebanese myself. But, like, the people that were born here, or the people that are trying to get work, or the people that are trying to get housing, or the people that are actually struggling, man, it's so hard for them to get houses, you know, and you get so much people coming in and they are getting all the house and they're getting all the work, they're getting all the jobs,
I think it's a change that Australia definitely needs.
You sound like you'd consider changing your vote to One Nation, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely, yep.
Why are you going towards them now?
As I said, just the views in relation to just how economical situation that we're facing at the moment.
What are they offering on the economics front that is working for you?
I think just, not always sort of, giving in terms of how Labor has been, and also just my immigration sort of needs to stop because we just can't contain the amount of people that are coming in.
When you say it needs to stop completely?
It does, yes. Yep. Yeah, at the moment it does until we get our backyard sorted out first.
What do you mean by that?
Just in general, it's just cost of living and, looking after our own people first before we have any more people come into the country.
I think she'll be good at it, but just worry about the islanders, She might stop all the islanders from coming to Australia. That's one thing I heard.
She kind of really wants to bring back a true blue Aussie, but to be honest, it's like, what is a true blue Aussie?
Some of the sounds from Penrith. Well, Luke, we heard there from an Australian with Lebanese heritage saying that he supported the messaging from Pauline Hanson on migration. How often have you heard that view this week?
Yeah, quite a bit, Sally. We've heard from a number of Western Sydney locals with migrant backgrounds supporting One Nation. A lot of them, though, didn't want to go on the record with their support for her push to reduce migration, far more than what the Coalition and what the Labor Party are saying. And it does raise this really interesting dynamic, especially in a place like Penrith. If you look at the latest census results from a few years ago, the majority of people here were born in Australia, but if you look at their parents, less than half have two parents born here. There is a significant population with a migrant background, and Pauline Hanson's messaging on migration is being welcomed by some of them. I spoke with Neha Maddock. She consults with businesses on racism policies and strategies. She's part of the Indian Australian community and she grew up in southwest Sydney. She told me that it is understandable why some in the migrant community are resonating with the messages from One Nation.
I'm noticing a real divide between second generation migrants, people like myself who have grown up in this country, who have only ever known this country as our home, who tend to be quite worried and scared, angry by what Pauline has been saying. And in comparison, hearing, say, a lot of my friends say that they talk to their parents and their parents are thinking about voting for One Nation. And I think that there are a few things tied up in that. I think that Pauline is saying things about Muslims that are broadly going unchallenged by the mainstream media. And so then she's tapping into some latent resentment, tying that then to economic issues. And then there's that extra element that when you know that you're different, when you know that people are looking around, they're seeing immigrants and they're going, oh, we don't like that. We don't like them. There is this real feeling that you need to fit in, that you need to make yourself a small target, that you need to be someone who is not targeted. And so how do you do that? You then back in what it seems like the mainstream or what the people in power are saying. And so I think it's almost this self-protective mechanism. But what I'm quite concerned by is when we do that, we end up normalising this kind of rhetoric and we end up making things harder and worse for everyone in the long term.
That's Neha Maddock speaking with Luke Sidham-Dundon as part of a wonderful snapshot into what the feelings towards One Nation and migration are at the moment out in Western Sydney. Now, Ed Husic is the Labor MP for the Western Sydney seat of Chifley, where, as you were hearing from Luke, One Nation is relaunching their branch. And when he joined the program, Sally began by asking him,
do you think that realistically the area will prove to be fertile ground for One Nation?
I think, I've certainly, Sally, always taken it seriously. I understand that the kind of brand of One Nation and some of the right parties appeals to people, and there's a big appeal largely off the back of the fact that people believe that government takes too long and doesn't sort their problems out. So I've always taken it seriously and tried to highlight again, if One Nation and its leadership is projecting itself in one way, let's actually prove if the talk matches the walk. And so I've always highlighted that in elections in times past. And I think you know, you just got to treat them seriously. I am very careful, can I just say, having lived through the 2019 election that made certain predictions, I'd be very careful about going to the bank on the back of predictions about electoral success. Let's wait and see, but let's no doubt treat them seriously. And I think the party, my party, needs to, I think it's been a bit of a wake-up call because I think we've focused a lot on the Greens, but for outer suburb areas, One Nation has always been just sitting there, lingering there, and we need to think about how to deal with things. Even though that scrub fire has started in the Conservative side of politics, I reckon it's making its way to us and we should treat it seriously.
Ed Husic is the Labor MP for the Western Sydney seat of Chifley, speaking to Radio National Breakfast. So with all this heated sentiment around migration in Australia, what is the economic argument? Well, Radio National Breakfast thought it would be a good idea to get two expert economists to break down the numbers. Leith Van Onselen is chief economist at the MB Fund and MB Super and co-founder of Macro Business. And Matt Grudnoff is a senior economist at the Australian Institute.
Just to start off with, Leith, if I may start with you. Last year, Australia's net migration number in 2025 was more than 300,000. That's more than the population of Hobart. Is that number sustainable?
Absolutely not. So let's be honest here. We've had an absolutely extreme amount of immigration. Over the past 3.5 years, we've had more than 1.4 million net migrants have arrived in Australia. And actually, since the end of 2019, which includes the pandemic lockdown, 267,000 net migrants have landed on average per year. And that's nearly 50,000 higher than the decade leading up to the pandemic. So this level of migration has been extreme. And it's one of the reasons why we have a rental crisis in this country, because nearly 300,000 more migrants are now in Australia than would have been here had the pre-pandemic trend continued. So that's 300,000 more people needing rental accommodation. And it's one of it's the main reason why we have a rental crisis.
Matt, how do you see those numbers?
Well, I mean, if you look in absolute numbers, absolutely the amount of migration is going up. But if you look in percentage terms, we've actually fallen back over the last year to the same population growth we had before the pandemic. Yes, in the last couple of years, migration and population growth have been a lot higher. But the couple of years before that, the borders were shut and we had none. And what's effectively happened is those two have offset each other. And you've got to remember that Australia is increasing the amount of housing at record levels as well. As we grow and become a larger country, we're able to build more homes. And the rate of housing is increasing at the same rate as the population is increasing at the moment.
Leith, you disagree?
Yeah, 100% I disagree. That is complete rubbish. We've got nearly 300,000 more migrants in the country than we would have had the pre-pandemic trend continued. We have a rental crisis in Australia with the rental vacancy rate tracking at historical lows. And even the federal government's own National Housing Supply and Affordability Council has clearly stated that we have a housing shortage, and the housing shortage has gotten worse. So I don't know where Matt's getting these delusional numbers from, quite frankly.
Matt, what do you think?
Well, I'm getting my numbers from the Australian Bureau of Statistics. If you look at the average population growth before the pandemic, it was 1.5%. Over the last year, the population growth in Australia has been 1.5%. It's gone back to the pre-pandemic growth rate.
Let's look at some of the questions that are coming through from listeners. To what extent has skilled migration become essential for maintaining the labour force, funding public services and supporting economic growth? And what would the consequences be if net migration were substantially reduced? Matt, if you want to jump in first, and Leith, we'll get your view as well. Matt?
Yeah, look, migration, particularly skilled migration, has played an important role in Australia's labour force. Migrants have filled a lot of the gaps that we can't and haven't filled in the past. At the moment, unemployment is quite low, and we bring in migrants in all sorts of areas. But, you know, they include things like healthcare and aged care and a whole lot of areas that Australians are needing more employment and more services in these areas, and migrants are filling those important gaps.
Leith, how do you see it? What would be the consequences if net migration were substantially reduced? There'd be different effects across the economy. How do you see it?
Yeah, of course there'd be different effects, but the fact of the matter is the overwhelming majority of Australia's migration program is actually unskilled. So if you take the permanent migrant program to start off with, and you factor in family visas, humanitarian visas, and also the partners of skilled migrants, only about 23% of Australia's permanent program is actually skilled. And then when you look at the temporary program, it's virtually almost all unskilled through students and graduates and bridging visas and that sort of thing. So we're actually running a mass unskilled migration program. And the other factor is we've grown the population by 9 million people this century through mass migration. And the fact of the matter is Australia has worse skills shortages than ever. So this whole notion that you solve a skills shortage through mass migration simply hasn't worked empirically, because there's a game of whack-a-mole. You can try and import migrants into one area to solve a skills shortage, and you create problems in other areas because those migrants demand services in those other areas. So the whole thing just doesn't work.
Matt, another listener question. Why can't Australia get all the skilled people that it needs? That's from Cam in Victoria.
We don't have the people and who necessarily want to do the jobs or have the skills that we need. If we completely retooled our education system, if we had the ability to expand our population naturally, then perhaps we could do that. But at the moment, we can't do that, and that's why migration is important in that area.
Leith Van Onselen, Chief Economist at the MB Fund and MB Super and co-founder of Macro Business, and Matt Grodnoff, Senior Economist at the Australia Institute. Well, it's a big day for Australian football as the Socceroos take on Paraguay from midday Australian Eastern Time in their final World Cup group match. Former Western Sydney Wanderer and Socceroo Ante Kovic, who now coaches the Bankstown City Lions women's team, join Sally ahead of the game.
It's an unbelievable opportunity for the Socceroos. We've got a very good chance to get progressing to the next stage. And any time Australia plays, like I got to wear the... Oh, it wasn't green and gold for me. It was a goalkeeper, grey or black. Mm. But to represent Australia, there's a huge amount of pride. So these boys will be ready to go. And I think the whole nation is going to be really keen to watch this.
Ante, earlier this morning I was speaking to Benny Boll, who's with a number of African community organisations, and he was saying when the likes of Irinkunda come home or Gout Gout, when sports stars come back and go back into their local communities, there can be a really powerful effect of lifting local kids, giving a sense of what might be possible. What do you think about that?
100%. You know, some of these guys, yeah, the Socceroos have evolved over the years, you could say. People like Toure, Irukunda, coming from African nations. Yeah, they've come to this country and they've really embraced it and they've worked hard. And they're part of the Socceroos now under that green and gold colour, under that Australian badge. And they're proud as punch to be representing Australia. And they've got there on merit. So coming back, you know, to be able to come to their communities and talk about the hard work that they did to be on the pinnacle of Australian soccer, world soccer, is a fantastic story, and it's an uplifting story that can, you know, raise so many of these young kids that have come across to give them a pathway to go, look, you can achieve whatever you want if you just apply and work hard and embrace the opportunities that you've been given by this country.
Why has Western Sydney been such a powerhouse for developing talent when it comes to football?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? We always have, out at Western Sydney, produced a lot of good football players. I grew up supporting Sydney United. I played for Marconi Stallions. And just those two clubs, the amount of Socceroos that they produced is mind-blowing. What's in the water here? I don't know. One of our greatest ever, Harry Kuehl, was a Western Sydney boy. Yeah, but I guess it could be a little bit of the demographics as well. I guess it's that hard-working kind of area where, you know, it's that middle class, work hard and you'll achieve something. And I think maybe the silver spoon wasn't put in their mouth and, you know, they want to achieve something.
Former Western Sydney Wanderer and Socceroo Ante Kovic speaking with Sally Sara there. And that's it from today's episode of The Breakfast Wrap. All interviews were done by Sally Sara and produced by the Radio National Breakfast team live out of Penrith this morning. I'm Brooke Young, filling in for Luke Sidham-Dundon, who'll be back in The Breakfast Wrap chair on Monday.